Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Now, Andy Rooney once said, the idea of living a long life appeals to everyone, but the idea of getting old doesn't appeal to anyone. How do you feel about that statement?
I disagree. I like to be old. I think it's humorous, and I like to comment on it, especially to younger people.
And I think they
regard this with curiosity, and I think that's a healthy thing. I think that every person in their 20s should have somebody in his or her 80s to pay attention to.
And I think what was intriguing about the initial research from George Mason was that we saw this consistency. It was great to see. I don't think it surprised me, but it was nice to see that regardless of where you're at, that with 23 minutes a day on average of doing the culmination or the combination of these three things, reading out loud, handwriting, and simple math done quickly, that people could see statistically significant improvement in their brain health.
You know, while there are challenges, what have been some of the unexpected joys or positive aspects of solo aging that you've personally discovered along the way?
Oh, you know, Derek sent me his list of questions before we got going on this, and I just loved that question. Because I have met some of the most wonderful people in the senior living industry and in the world of aging and retirement. I did some retirement coaching before I kind of discovered solo aging and specialized in that. And I met people that were in the business of developing retirement coaching practices, and I learned a lot from them. And then when I got really interested in the whole solo aging and how the senior living industry fits so strongly and necessarily into that, then I started getting to know people in that industry. And it has been a delight. You know, the people that I knew and the clients I had in management consulting did not have the heart that the people I meet in the senior living industry do, and in the aging community. It's just a whole different ball game. And honestly, I wish I had found this as the avenue for my career when I was in my 20s or 30s. But here I am now, and really enjoying the people that I've met.
Look, you know, old people are my jam. I mean, on CBS Sunday Morning, if you know, a profile of a hot young Hollywood celebrity comes up and, you know, different correspondents can jockey for it, I usually don't even compete. I'm not that interested. I'm interested in older people. When I created my cooking show, My Grandmother's Ravioli, which ran for 4 seasons on Cooking Channel, in which I went around the country learning to cook from grandmothers and grandfathers in their kitchen, I did it not so much because I wanted to learn how to cook, and I'm still pretty lousy in the kitchen, but because I really wanted to hear from people in their 70s, 80s, and even older, the values that had shaped their lives, what mattered to them at this stage in life.
You know, when we're talking about solo aging, we've been talking a lot about you know, some of the negative or stressful aspects. In writing the article, were you able to uncover any benefits or positive things about being a solo ager?
I am so glad you asked that question. Absolutely. In fact, there was an AARP study, I think it was last year, about solo aging. And they asked respondents for, you know, their feelings about being a solo ager. And the first three responses were all positive. It was, you know, prizing independence and feeling satisfied and happy with their lives. And the number one positive aspect was freedom. So, you know, there are benefits to not having to run what you want to do by somebody. Like, you want to travel, you can travel. You know, whatever your idea of an ideal retirement, or just, you know, what you want to do as you grow older, you don't have to compromise. You don't have to get anybody's permission. You know, so there's a great freedom in that. And I think that that's a huge benefit of, you know, for solo agents.
But because of its location, we're able to bring the university into the community so that even those with mobility challenges or for whatever reason aren't able to fully take advantage of the university, you know, we have a faculty member every single Thursday at 3 p.m. that comes in and gives a different lecture, or, you know, a new faculty member every week. We've got students performing in the building. We have students living in the building that do all of our musical programming. I mean, we bring the university to them. And so I think you can really say that you get what you need in terms of care as you age, but also you get what you want in terms of learning and engagement, intellectual stimulation.
So we've got all these issues that invite the marketing of pharmaceuticals to older people. So it's not just we should change the marketing, we should change the paradigm, we should change the dialogue, we should be talking about the wisdom of older people, the life experience, the emotional intelligence, all that. We should. We absolutely should. But I think we also, if we hope to de-emphasize the role of big pharma in what does get marketed to elders, we need healthier elders. And in order to have healthier elders, we need a healthier us, all of us, because health begins early in life. And the earlier you intervene to start protecting it, the better. It's never too late, but the earlier, the better.
I think workforce is going to continue to be a serious challenge. The second is affordability. I mean, if you don't have resources to purchase, then it's a challenge. And we also are seeing somewhat of a decline in family caregivers. This is a demographic phenomenon, not family caregivers not doing the work, because the percentage of caregivings is exactly the same as the first study that I did in 1982. Ooh.
Interesting.
That is 80 to 95% of all services are provided by family members. So we talk about the formal sector, right? We haven't calculated the what goes into family caregiving. That's all unpaid.
Sure.
That's going to continue, but the proportion of those folks is going to shrink somewhat for a number of demographic reasons. So we're going to need more of a formal workforce, and we're going to need to have more options for where people can live and receive services.
If the average age or median age of move-in has been increasing, and if you happen to know that the degree of frailty is increasing as well, then it's predictable that the units are going to turn over faster because the person's length of stay is going to be shorter. And that's going to trigger, we've got to invest more in marketing because we're going to have to generate X percent more sales in order to keep the units filled. But it's also predictive of the character of the independent living community is at risk of changing. And once that changes, then it makes it even more difficult to attract the kind of resident that you're trying
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, you know, in some ways it's like simplistic. And actionable data is simplistic, but the trick is to find it and use it.
So Jennifer Love Hewitt said recently in an interview, and Taylor Swift had said something similar, fans pick this age that they love, that they think represents you, and you're never supposed to grow beyond that. Do you agree?
Wow. Well, okay, this is a weird thing. I would say men have come up to me about letting my hair color grow out. Some have said to me, why aren't you coloring your hair?
Interesting.
Or if I cut my hair, oh, I liked your hair long. And then there are women that come up and go, oh, thank you for not coloring your hair anymore. I'm inspired. It's so great not to go to the salon every 4 weeks. And
interesting.
So people just have their opinions no matter what.
You know, I got my nursing home license in December of 1975, which is sort of, I don't know, scary or crazy to say or admit it, right? But so a lot's changed in senior living since the mid-70s. And you have to remember that in those days, senior living pretty much was a watered-down version of a hospital. And Nobody had a choice as to when they get up or what they eat or when they were going to get a bath. And so really the biggest change has been around person-directed care. And then you have the architects and operators who sort of reimagine what senior living could be coming from that kind of environment into introduction of assisted living, the first CCRC, and the evolution of all those kinds of models.
We need things that eliminate steps. So think about it. How many steps does a nurse's aide have to take in a day? A food service worker, a hospitality worker, housekeeping staff, so environmental services. So think about removing steps. So for example, in one community I was working with, we put in these robotic servers in the dining room. Well, yeah, because, the wait staff, the server staff spend most of their time going back and forth to the kitchen when they could be going table to table, either taking an order, plating an order, or picking it up and putting it on the robot. Let the robot go back and forth.
Gender is kind of interesting because women outlive men, but they have many more years of disability. So the experience of aging is different and its burdens are different for males and females. Women are much more likely to be impoverished, partly because they get paid less for the same work or for their work throughout their lives, significantly less. They're more likely to have had years when they weren't paid during child raising or elder care. So they end up with a lot less money, and that leads to poverty, and poverty leads to suffering.
You know, the thing that I've really learned from this, which is why I still care so much about the work and feel so lucky to be doing it, is that, people are full of this intense potential. And we forget that there's no change in that as we get older. And sometimes I think even as we get older, our potential is still increasing because we've got a better handle on what we're all about, where we're going, what we're capable of. Sometimes we spent our lives, a lot of women I hear this from, they took care of everybody else for, 50 years, right? And then they reach a certain age and they're like, it's finally my time, right? And when you talk to somebody who's in that moment and they're kind of ready for some real, some real powerful change to do something really cool, we're reaching those people at their best moment. There's an effervescence to it. And I think that the technology is such a tiny piece of it, but it is a little bit like taking the cork out of the bottle sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Where are the biggest gaps right now in how we approach aging from a public health perspective?
So I think the biggest gaps are in just not delivering the conditions and communities that help people be healthy, the traditional role of public health. I'm concerned that there are going to be cutbacks in even how we track who's sick with what and how many people in different age groups have what kinds of problems so that we can plan the prevention and services that are needed, because they vary to some degree from community to community. So how do we target what a given community would benefit from? And then we need to build really the mandate for prevention for older people and build the capabilities in a newly trained public health workforce that understands how to do prevention across the whole life course and for older adults.
Aging services is really human services, what we're talking about. And human services is really something that many of us connect to, whether we're thinking about older adult population or not. And so how do we really encapsulate that in a case, a value proposition that people that are great leaders out there in the field outside of aging can really see a reason to be drawn into our space, So over time, I look to organizations out in the field that are doing innovative things like being more innovative about helping individuals gain citizenship in the United States and providing them a pathway to be legal citizens of the country so that they can stay and work and be a part of our infrastructure. I'm seeing things out there of being able to invite in residents of different backgrounds and demographics to hold space within communities so that they can understand this is an option that perhaps can work for you, but then also finding ways to support staff members, you know, beyond just the typical EAP, but really being able to say, you know, we want to develop a development plan with you on how you'll grow over the next few years, and not necessarily just for the needs of the organization, but for the needs of you as a human.
Sure. Talk a little about how that works, the partnerships between communities and villages, and what the what the benefit is for each side.
Well, you know, coming from the assisted living, you know, we always had those "I'm not ready yet," and it happens. People want to live in their homes. The partnerships, I mean, we have a great example of partnerships in Northern Virginia. There's a life care community called Goodwin Living, and we partner with them. We have for like, I don't know, since 2014. And at first, you know, there's this little pushback, oh, it's in competition, but it's not, because not everybody, as I said before, can move into that life care. But they do programs, they are hosting, they're giving back to the community just like we are, you know.
The phrase silver tsunami reflects one of our biggest ageist problems. And that is, if you think about a tsunami, it's true that in many tragedies, there are some silver linings, but people never think of a tsunami as a positive thing. It's an unmitigated disaster. And so the phrase silver tsunami says that the increased longevity and the growing number of older adults in society is an unmitigated disaster for society. That, to my mind, is the complete wrong way of looking at it. Put another way, what I've written is, it's turning the longevity bonus into a longevity curse.
I think that's a trade-off, and we're at the trade-off stage right now. And the value exceeds the fear. And it's time for people to make a trade-off and seize the day, right? Things that can help them function in their lives. And by the way, there's a ton of things, I don't even want to bother listing them, that you can't do in person anymore. And so your device and the software that is used to access services that you may benefit from, this is the future. A lot of the shops that closed up that were actually providing in-person capabilities. And so it's time to everybody to get with the program. And if they can't, if they're afraid, somebody needs to help them, whether it's a family member or it's a class at a senior center, whatever. Sit down and help.
So what are your goals for SCORE in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, we want to keep building on the impact that we've had. I mean, last year, SCORE helped to start over 54,000 businesses and add over 83,000 jobs through our mentoring and education.
That's amazing.
It's really incredible the work that our mentors are able to support. You know, those small business owners are doing the work, and we appreciate that they allow us to be a part of their journey. So we want to continue to build on that. We must make sure that we remain as resilient and flexible as we're asking our small business owners to. So I do think that in the next couple of years with SCORE, we will need to revolutionize the way, again, our clients connect with our mentors to make sure we're meeting the needs of the clients and how they want to engage.
So many people think of a nursing home as a place to go and just simply live out your last days or just exist for, you know. I mean, I've heard older adults that I've interviewed refer to it as God's waiting room, but there is a lot of life happening, and I've certainly witnessed it, but it came through loud and clear in your documentaries. I mean, the couple that got married and recruited two of the nurses to be I think they call them the man of honor, and then the best man as well. That was a great story.
Yeah, that was June. That was a really, really beautiful story. And, you know, it goes, that's another example, like going back to the story about Kevin, right? Like, they teach us something. You and I, if we haven't met these caregivers or we haven't met happy residents, you and I might think it's the place where you go to die. And then you see this story where these two fall in love and that their two best friends are their caregivers, their nurses. I love being forced to learn something that corrects, you know, where I was wrong.
Even when I was building products for, let's say, a much younger audience who allegedly were more savvy, I would always sort of lean toward simplicity over complexity, because even though you might look at it and think there's not much here, the trick is to hide the power of the technology under the covers. So the magic, you know, sort of happens for the consumer kind of without them realizing it.
I would say there's a bunch of different messages that I've gotten over the years. So number one, maybe they're bored and they realize that they're doing something all these years and all of a sudden they have a better way to do it, or they might not have seen that it exists. And they say, you know what? Why don't I give it a shot? I have the time. I don't have the pressure from my career that I've done. I don't have to worry about raising kids or paying for college. And I have some funds. So why don't I give it a shot? And others maybe want to leave a legacy and maybe build this company that they can leave for their family. There's a lot of reasons, but it's very interesting to see people at all different ages, but seniors and people who are a bit older saying, you know what? I want to give this a shot. And it's fun. And I get a chance to do it with them.
We have poor communication is probably one of the first ones I see, because interesting, I worked with an organization, this was last fall, and they had brought in all of their directors. And I walked around to the different tables and somebody said, "We just heard this news today. She just told me this. I had not heard this." And it was actually information that should have trickled down from the top. And so when I see little cues like that where things aren't being communicated or the team doesn't feel like there's transparency, that's the time to start talking about how is this team working? How are we energized? So it can happen pretty easily with a breakdown in just a couple things.
So if we touch on grow first, I think one thing that's really important is that we have been fed a steady diet of inaccurate information about growing older. And that information is that it's all decline. And the truth is in the literature that there are many things that get better as you get older, but we don't hear about them because the anti-aging industry is fueled by fear. And when you give the actual information about the things that get better, it's not lucrative, but it really matters. In fact, people who endorse and believe these accurate age beliefs live on average 7.5 years longer and actually have different inflammation markers. So if this was a drug, we would all be clamoring for it.